that our minds, of course, want to avoid and resist this giving, this generosity, and so that we don't want to do those things. We're selfish, we're stingy, we want to keep everything for ourselves. And so this is a way to develop, this is a way to clean, to wipe away those things which are unclean, which are unwholesome in our minds.
Yeah. ให้พิจารณาอย่างนั้นอันนี้ประการหนึ่งควรให้มีในใจของเรานะไม่ใช่บางคนจะเห็นว่ายังไงก็เบียดเบียนตัวเองที่ไม่ใช่เบียดเบียนตัวเบียดเบียนกิเลสต่างหากนะทำให้ตัวมันดีขึ้นมาให้กิเลสมันหายไปบางคนจะเขายังงั้นก็เบียดเบียนตัวที่เบียดเบียนเจ้าของเนี่ยอย่างนั้นไม่ใช่นั่นเบียดเบียนกิเลส
So this is one thing that we all should try and develop and make a useful thing in our lives. And some of us may think when we hear this, oh, we're taking advantage, we're exploiting ourselves and we're you know, not looking after ourselves. But he says, in fact, that's not the case, that you're exploiting and taking and overcoming one's defilements, one's kilesa.
กิเลสนี่เหมือนแมวถ้าให้กินตามใจมันก็ยิ่งมาเรื่อยๆอีกวันหนึ่งมันกวนนักไปต้องให้อาหารมันเถอะมันจะมากี่วันมาร้องแงวแงวสองวันไม่เห็นคนนี้กิเลสไม่ชอบเราแล้วเราก็จะได้สบายต่อไป
He says our kilesa, our defilements are like a cat that as long as we continue to feed the cat that it will keep coming around and meowing and coming to bother usBut right away, when we no longer feed it and refuse to feed it anymore, then it's only a few days and it's going to go away when no longer come around to bother us.
นั่นทำให้กิเลสกลัวเราอย่าให้ทำให้เรากลัวกิเลสให้กิเลสกลัวเรา
So to make our defilements afraid of us, not that we shouldn't be afraid of our defilements.
นี่พูดให้เห็นในธรรมในปัจจุบันในใจของเราเดี๋ยวนี้ธรรมะของพระพุทธเจ้าของเราอยู่ที่ในธรรมที่ควรรู้ควรเห็นในใจของเราเป็นอย่างนี้พูดตรงที่ก็รู้ได้ทุกคนเห็นทุกคนไม่ใช่อยู่ตำราลึกๆไม่ต้องไปเรียนให้มันมากพิจารณาเดี๋ยวนี้ก็เห็นที่อาตมาพูดเป็นเห็นทุกคนเพราะมันมีในใจทุกคนมันมีจิตทุกคนได้ไหมถ้ารู้มันได้อย่างนี้ก็รู้จักมันก็มีจิตทุกคนอย่างนี้นี่เราต้องการไม่เลี้ยงกิเลสไว้ให้รู้จักกิเลสอย่าให้มันมากวนเราอย่างนี้อันนี้เป็นอันหนึ่งที่เราจะควรรู้ให้มีในใจไว
้ So in this way is the way that we can come and study the Dharma of the Buddha that you don't have to seek the scriptures to seek sacred books and things to try and find the Dharma of the Buddha that in just this simple example this simple teachingThat he's giving you right now. That if each and every one of us looks into themselves and reflects on this and contemplates it, that we can see this very simple teaching and realize it for ourselves. That we don't have to look to very profound examples and very profound teachings and scriptural quotations from various masters and patriarchs and things, but just from this very simple and down-to-earth kind of approach that we can.See and realize for ourselves the Buddha's Dhamma.
นี่การเห็นแก่ตัวด้วยวัตถุเราเห็นได้อย่างนี้ทีนี้การเห็นแก่ตัวด้วยความเห็นอย่างเราทุกคนใครจะไปเรียนมาจากทิเบตก็ได้มาจากเซนก็ได้เถรวาทก็ได้คริสต์ก็ได้แล้วก็เข้ามารวมกันอันนี้ก็ให้ทานความเห็นเหมือนกันอย่าของฉันถูกของคุณผิดของฉันดีของคุณไม่ดีอย่าให้ทานใครดีก็ดีไปใครถูกก็ถูกไปให้ทานเลยอย่างนี้หมดปัญหาแล้วนี่การให้ทานด้วยทิฏฐิมนะความเห็นไม่มีเรื่องให้ได้ไม่เห็นแก่ตัวนะนี่การให้ทานความเห็นความมานะความยึดมั่นถือมั่น นี่ก็เป็นการให้ทานมาเห็นแก่ตัวอันหนึ่งอันนี้ก็เป็นเครื่องแบ่งเบากิเลสเราออกไปเยอะเหมือนกัน
So these examples that he was giving you in regards to dana to generosity he says this is in a material way how to give things in a material way to give objects give food whatever it might be and so he is talking about a more refined a more subtle type of giving and that comes with it.Of the giving of one's pride, of one's views and opinions. For example, all of the people here, many of us have studied with different teachers, and probably everybody has their particular method or their particular approach and school that they prefer. Some prefer the Tibetan, some prefer the Zen, some Theravadan. But whatever the case, when we hear other people's teachings and listen to other people, and we.Think when they're talking, they think, oh, their method is no good, but our method is the best, or that, oh, that's not wrong and ours is right. He said to really look at that and to be generous and to give that up, to let it go, and to be generous in this way, not to cling and to hold to one's stubborn views and opinions and things that you know, but to keep them to yourself and just to listen and not to make yourself very arrogant.And proud and haughty, but rather to learn how to give these things up.
อันนี้ก็เป็นเครื่องกันความกัตถรู้ของเราประการหนึ่งนะทีนี้ก็เรียกว่าอาการให้ทานต่อไปนั่นก็เรียกพูดถึงเครื่องอุปการของผู้ปฏิบัตินั้นต้องมีคุณสมบัติประการที่สองเนี่ยคือให้มีศีลศีระเรียกว่าศีระจะเป็นศีลอะไรก็ได้คำที่ว่ารักษาศีลเนี่ยมันศีลห้าก็มีศีลแปดก็มีศีลสองร้อยยี่สิบก็มีแล้วแต่สมควรกับเราจะต้องให้เป็นคนที่มีศีลศีลเนี่ยเป็นพ่อแม่ของธรรมทั้งหลายที่ยังไม่บังเกิดจะเกิดขึ้นที่เกิดขึ้นแล้วศีลนี้จะดูแลธรรมะอันนั้นให้เจริญขึ้นเหมือนพ่อแม่กับลูก
So this is first aspect that he talked about the dana aspect that this is one of the things that we have to develop and perfect on the path to enlightenment and the next thing that he would like to talk about is the sila the discipline or theMorality aspect of the teaching, the five precepts, training precepts, or the eight, and he compares them this to like the mother and the father of the Dhamma. That these are the things which will be conducive to realizing the Dhamma. The things which which are the kind of like the overseers and to watch over.And the Dhamma, so as to protect it and to allow it to arise.
ศีลของคฤหัสถ์นี้ก็เรียกว่าโดยตรงมันนะพูดน้อยๆนะพูดมากมันก็มากหนึ่งก็ให้เมตตาสัตว์มนุษย์ทั้งหมดไม่ให้เบียดเบียนตลอดถึงการฆ่าสองก็เรียกว่าให้มีความซื่อสัตย์นะอย่าไปข้ามจิตของกันเด็กกันพูดง่ายๆคือไม่ให้ขโมยของกันนั่นเองสิ่งที่สามตัวกามเมคือให้รู้จักประมาณอย่างนั้นอยู่ในครวาสก็ต้องมีครอบครัวมีพ่อบ้านแม่บ้านแต่ท่านให้รู้จักประมาณปฏิบัติธรรมะก็ได้ให้รู้จักพ่อบ้านของเรารู้จักแม่บ้านของเราเท่านั้นให้รู้จักประมาณอย่าทำให้เกินประมาณให้รู้จักประมาณให้มีขอบเขตแต่โดยมากคนจะไม่มีขอบเขตใช่ด้วยนะบางทีก็มีพ่อบ้านคนเดียวก็ไม่พอมีสองด้วยบางทีแม่บ้านคนเดียวก็ไม่พออีกมีสามด้วยอย่างนี้อาตมาว่าคนเดียวก็กินไม่หมดแล้วมีพ่อบ้านคนเดียวก็ไม่หมดเนี่ยมีแม่บ้านคนเดียวก็ไม่หมดแล้ว เราจะมีสองคนสามคนมันเรื่องสกปรกทั้งนั้นเนี่ยอย่างนี้ต้องพยายามชำระพยายามชำระให้มันรู้จักประมาณไอ้ความรู้จักประมาณนี่มันบริสุทธิ์ดีที่ไม่รู้จักประมาณนี่มันไม่มีขอบเขตถึงไม่อาหารอเด็ดอร่อยอย่างนี้อย่าไปนึกถึงความอเด็ดอร่อยมันมากให้รู้จักท้องของเราให้รู้จักประมาณถ้าเรากินให้มากก็ลำบากเหมือนกันอย่างนี้ให้รู้จักประมาณความรู้จักประมาณนี่ดีมากที่สุดอันนี้ให้มีแม่บ้านคนเดียวก็พอแล้วมีพ่อบ้านคนเดียวก็พอแล้วมีสองมีสามเกินขอบเขตแล้วบุญบายดูก็ได้อย่างนี้ไอ้ความซื่อสัตย์สุจริตนี้ก็เป็นเครื่องไอ้กำจัดกิเลสเราก็เหมือนกันเป็นคนตรงมีซื่อสัตย์เป็นคนที่ไม่ดื่มสุราน้ำเมานี้มันก็รู้จักประมาณให้เลิกมันจะดีมันเมาในครอบในครัวเราก็มากแล้วเมาลูกเมาหลานเมาทรัพย์สมบัติหลายอย่างมันก็พอแล้วยิ่งเอาเหล้ามากินเข้าไปอีกมันก็มืดเท่านั้นแหละอย่างนั้นอันนี้บริษัทเราทั้งหลายเนี่ยดูตัวเราเองถ้าหากว่ามันมากใครมีมากก็พยายามไปค่อยปัดเป่ามันออกนะนะปัดเป่ามันออกเดี๋ยวขอโทษเลยนะเนี่ยพูดด้วยความดีนะอยากจะให้ดีอยากจะให้รู้จักมันต้องรู้จักว่าอะไรมันเป็นอะไรที่เรามาทุกวันนี้มันอะไรมันกดดันอยู่ก็เพราะอะไรการกระทำเรานั้นมันกดดันของเราทำดีมันก็ได้ดีทำชั่วมันก็ได้ชั่วอันนี้เป็นเหตุอันนี้ขอฝากไปนะคนดึงสินเลย
so in regard
หลายไปทั้งวันนี
้ to the precepts to the training precepts that he wants to talk about each one of themAnd the first one is non-violence, or the non-exploitation of other living things. And this means all living things, from the lowest form of life to the highest form, human beings, down to all animal forms and insects, and includes all sentient beings. And the second is what he says, being respectful of and knowing, respecting others' possessions, namely, not to steal, not to take those things which are not given. The third, he describes the third training precept, the kamesu, the sexual misconduct, that we have to know what the right amount in this is. And so he describes it in the way that they teach it in Thailand, and that's that we should know that when we have a family, we have a wife, and we have a husband, that we should know the right amount in our sexual relationship. That the right amount, he says, that we have to look for ourselves. He's talking about overindulgence. And this overindulgence, of course, that we're not satisfied with our husband. We're not satisfied with our wives. And so we go and find ourselves another wife, maybe two wives.Or we go and find ourselves another husband, maybe two or three husbands. And he says that we have one husband and one, not one wife, and there's more than enough to handle, to look after with one person, let alone creating all of these problems and going out and seeking and indulging with many other people. So we have to really look, and we have to investigate this for ourselves, because please be sympathetic with me. I know this is a very touchy subject.And he says himself that he knows that, you know, the situation here. He's been in America enough, and I've told him enough about what it's like. And so he says that we have to develop fidelity, loyalty to one's spouse, that we have to know. The term he uses is the approximation, the right amount, not overindulgence in this thing.In sexuality, and we have to learn to limit ourselves, to restrain ourselves. I'll wait on that. There's another that he brought up before about in sexual relations outside of marriage, but I'll let, I'm sure somebody will ask that and bring it up. to that. So he is very strong and is very emphatic with this teaching, the knowing the right amount. And he said that, like in our families and things, that we already have enough to look after in this, in just in that way, so that we want to have a limit, something to kind of encase our lives, so as we have some direction and guidance. If we step outside of that boundary that we set for ourselves, of course, we just create innumerable problems. And he talked about the other two precepts, mainly the intoxication in those things which lead to intoxication and which cause us to be negligent and unmindful of what we do. He says having a wife and children, having a husband and children in a family, that we're already intoxicated enough with being caught up and looking after and dealing with this thing. And he says if you come and add other things such as alcohol or whatever it is to get yourself high, to get yourself stoned, he says that you become more intoxicated, you just create total darkness for yourself. And so you must, and he says that he's speaking very strongly, and so please forgive me, he says, that I'm speaking so strongly, but that his intentions is coming from the purest intentions, and he only wishes the best for each and every one of you.
ขอโทษด้วยนะ
Forgive me.
ไม่อยากจะพูดหรอกแต่พระพุทธเจ้าบอกให้พูด
I don't want to say anything, but the Buddha told me to.
อันนี้เป็นเครื่องอุปกรณ์อันหนึ่งจะให้เราปฏิบัติสะดวกนะที่นี่เมื่อมีศีลบริสุทธิ์ดีแล้วนี่มีความรักกันซื่อสัตย์แล้วก็มีความสุขความเดือดร้อนไม่มีนะแล้วก็เมื่อความเดือดร้อนไม่มีแล้วก็เรียกว่าไม่เบียดเบียนซึ่งกันและกันเนี่ยมีความสุขท่านเรียกว่าสักขะนี่คืออยู่ในเมืองสวรรค์แล้วสบายกินก็สบายนอนก็สบายสบายนั่นเรียกว่าสุขสุขเกิดจากศีลที่การกระทำมาแล้วเพราะว่าทำอย่างนี้เป็นเหตุให้อันนี้เกิดขึ้นมาละความชั่วเช่นนี้เป็นกฎอันหนึ่งเพื่อให้ความดีนี้เกิดขึ้นมานี่ถ้าเราชำระศีลอย่างนี้ความชั่วนี้ไปความสุขเกิดขึ้นมานี่เลยเกิดเพราะการปฏิบัติดีปฏิบัติชอบสุขนี้ทีนี้ยังไม่จบแค่นี้นะคนเราถ้ามีความสุขเราชอบเผลอเหมือนกันเนี่ยชอบเผลอไม่อยากไปที่ไหนชอบติดสุขขึ้นนั่นแหละไม่อยากจะไปที่ไหนแล้วชอบสุข มันเป็นสักขะคถาเมืองสวรรค์ถ้าพูดตามปุพราธิฐานเป็นเมืองสวรรค์ผู้ชายก็เป็นเทวบุตรผู้หญิงก็เป็นเทวดาเนี่ยสบายไม่รู้เนื้อรู้ตัวอย่างนี้อันนี้ท่านไปพิจารณาอีกทีหนึ่งว่าอันนี้เมืองสวรรค์อย่าไปลืมมันให้พิจารณาอีกให้พิจารณาโทษของความสุขอีกไอ้ความสุขนี่มันไม่แน่นอนเหมือนกันมีความสุขแล้วเมื่อไรไอ้ความสุขจะเลิกจากเรานี่เป็นของไม่แน่เหมือนกันเมื่อความสุขเกิดเลิกจากเราความทุกข์เกิดขึ้นมาเราก็ร้องไห้อีกแหละแน่นางเทวลาให้แล้วทีเนี้ยเทวบุตรต้องร้องไห้เป็นทุกข์แล้วท่านจึงให้พิจารณาโทษของมันโทษของมันโทษของความสุขมีอยู่แต่ในเวลาที่มันมีสุขนี้ไม่รู้จักมันมืดประการหนึ่งเลยมีความสุขความสุขนี่ปิดไม่เห็นทุกข์เกิดขึ้นมาทีนี้ไอ้ความสุขนี่ก็ยังไม่ใช่เหมือนกันเป็นกิเลสอันหนึ่งอีกเป็นกิเลสอย่างละเอียดที่คนทั้งหลายชอบกันทุกคนชอบมีความสุขนี่ที่เราไปชอบมันเองแหละเมื่อหากเวลามันที่ไม่ชอบแล้วมันจะทุกข์เกิดขึ้นมาอันนี้ท่านจึงให้พิจารณาทับเข้าไปอีกทีหนึ่งว่า สุขนี่มันก็ไม่แน่เหมือนกันให้เห็นโทษของความสุขเมื่อมันเปลี่ยนขึ้นมาแล้วมันจะมีทุกข์เกิดมันนี่เป็นของไม่แน่เหมือนกันอย่าไปหมายมั่นมันอันนี้เรียกว่าอธินวกถานี้มีความสุขแต่พิจารณาความสุขอีกทีหนึ่งอย่าปล่อยเฉยอย่างนั้นให้เห็นเช่นนี้ก็จะเห็นความสุขนั้นเป็นเรื่องไม่แน่นอนเมื่อเห็นของไม่แน่นอนเช่นนั้นเราก็ต้องไม่เข้าไปจับอย่างเต็มที่เราไม่ยึดอย่างเต็มที่มันคือยึดมาดูแต่ก็วางไม่ใช่ยึดไม่วางอย่างนี้เห็นความสุขอย่างนี้เป็นคนละครึ่งไอ้ครึ่งหนึ่งเป็นส่วนดีครึ่งหนึ่งเป็นส่วนชั่วถ้าเรารู้จักประมาณไอ้ความสุขนี่เราก็เห็นโทษมันเหมือนกันให้พิจารณาอย่างนี้มีสุขก็พิจารณาสุขไปอีกเป็นสักกถาแล้วเห็นโทษของความสุขอีกอันนี้เป็นคุณสมบัติของผู้ประพฤติปฏิบัติไม่ให้หลงทางอันนี้ก็จำไว้อันหนึ่ง
So as we develop, as we purify our sila, that we will begin to reap and the fruits, the results of the purification of our sila, and that we will experience the joy and the happiness, the serenity that comes from having purified one's sila, and that whatever we do, that will be very happy, in a very happy state, and that the harmony, the peace and harmony that we will have in our lives will be indeed great, that everywhere thing that we do, everywhere that we go, that we will be we could say temporarily contented and happy. And but he says, and he compares this to having entered heaven, a heavenly state, and so that we become like Mr. and Mrs. Tewada. And Tewada is like a celestial being or a deity. And this is, of course, a anthropomorphic way of a simile, a way of talking about our mental happiness that is the result from having relinquished those things which are bad, which are unwholesome, which are evil, and having developed those things which are good, which are wholesome. And so he says, when people do develop this, that that you have to take it a step further, that when people have reaped the fruits of purifying their sila in this way, that they tend to forget themselves in it, they tend to lose themselves in that happiness. And he says, this is a danger, this is something that we must be careful of, that that very happiness that we're experiencing is the like closing the door or putting the unhappiness because of the characteristic of this happiness, that it is impermanent, that it's like not letting us see the other side, that when this changes, that we can then experience unhappiness and suffering. So we must be very careful to look deeper into this happiness and not to lose ourselves in it, not to forget ourselves in it, but to, as we experience it and the results of these good deeds, that we don't attach or cling too tightly to them, and we know how to look into them deeper and know that this as well is a changing condition, that is an uncertain thing.
อันนี้ก็เป็นคุณสมบัติอันหนึ่งสำหรับที่ให้ผู้ปฏิบัติเราพิจารณาเข้าไปง่ายๆอย่างนั้นเมื่อเป็นเช่นนี้เราก็เห็นเรื่องของโรคว่ามันไม่เที่ยงนี่มันไม่เที่ยงอย่างนั้นมันก็ไม่เที่ยงอันนั้นมันก็เป็นทุกข์อันนี้มันก็เป็นทุกข์จิตใจเราก็เห็นนี่เนี่ยคำกถาเลยว่าจิตใจของเราก็ออกเบื่อแล้วเบื่อรูปก็เป็นอย่างนั้นเสียงก็เป็นอย่างนั้นกลิ่นก็เป็นอย่างนั้นรสก็เป็นอย่างนั้นความรักก็เป็นเพราะนั้นความเกลียดก็เป็นอย่างนั้นเบื่อไม่อยากไปยึดไม่อยากไปยึดมั่นถือมั่นแล้วในรูปในเสียงในกลิ่นในรสในโผฏฐัพพะเนี่ยคำว่าทำใจออกจากอุปทานนั้น มายืนอยู่ตรงนี้ให้สบายมองดูเฉยๆไม่ก็ไปยึดมั่นถือมั่นนั่นก็ถึงความสงบของการปฏิบัติเท่านั้น
So as we continue to investigate and to look into ourselves and see the impermanent nature of this happiness and see the impermanent nature of the unhappiness that these things continue to change and that they're uncertain, that the mind begins to turn away from those things, that dispassion arises, that we turn away and become fed up, no longer wish to reap those results and to indulge in these things. And as we turn away and detachment sets in, that we a very peaceful and tranquil state will arise in our minds.
ไม่อยากเกิดมาอีกแล้วมันยุ่งนี่กรรมกถาออกไม่อยากจะยึดมั่นถือมั่นแล้วมันก็เกิดมีความสงบขึ้นมานะที่ไม่มีความสงบที่เรามานั่งกรรมฐานกันนี่มันวุ่นในใจเพราะอะไรสิ่งทั้งหลายที่เราทำไว้แล้วมันเป็นกฎอันหนึ่งซึ่งมันมาตามทันของพวกท่านทั้งหลายหรือใครทั้งหลายทุกคนที่กฎนี้ได้ทำไปแล้วทำอันนี้ไว้อันนั้นเราจะเกิดขึ้นมาอันนี้เป็นเหตุเกิดขึ้นมาสิ่งที่คุณญาติโยมทั้งหลายที่มานั่งกรรมฐานในมีความสงบนี้ก็เรียกว่าผลมันถึงนั้นเหตุที่มันมีมาแล้วมันถึงเกิดความวุ่นอย่างนั้นบางคนก็สงสัยปัญหาเยอะเหลือเกินนะถ้าหากว่าไอ้ศีรษะเนี่ยถ้าไปทุบดูเห็นจะมีแต่ปัญหาถึงนั้นมีแต่ความสงสัยถึงนั้นนี่เพราะอะไรอันนี้เราสร้างไว้แล้วในอดีตนั้นสร้างอย่างนั้นมันจะเกิดอย่างนี้สร้างอย่างนี้จะเกิดอย่างนั้นต่อตายกันมาถึงเป็นเหตุที่ให้เราไม่สบายใจเดี๋ยวนี้มันมีเหตุเกิดขึ้นมาบัดนี้เรามาฟังธรรมบัดนี้ให้รู้จักว่าอะไรมันเป็นอะไรทำเหตุให้ยุ่งมันก็ยุ่งไม่ยุ่งเวลานี้ก็ยุ่งเวลาหน้าไม่ยุ่งวันนี้ก็พรุ่งนี้ไม่ยุ่งชาตินี้ก็ชาติต่อไปต้องมีความยุ่งอย่างนั้นอันนี้ท่านเรียกว่ากรรมก็ได้นี่ฉะนั้นวันนี้ก็ให้โยมพากันรู้จักพิจารณาแล้วก็ให้อยากให้อภัยด้วยนะวันนี้พูดมากไปแต่ละวันนี้นะพูดมากก็เพราะว่ารักโดยธรรมะแต่อาตมาก็มาอเมริกานี่ไม่เคยมานะมาเราจะปล่อยของดีไปให้โยมทุกคนให้ไปพิจารณาดูนะถ้าหากว่ามันผิดอย่ามาโทษอาตมานะโทษพระพุทธเจ้าพระพุทธเจ้าบอกให้อาตมาเทศอย่างนี
้ So as when thisdispassion, detachment sets in that we turn away from all things that we no longer want to be reborn, we no longer want to be born again. He said that all of the things that each and every one of us is experiencing here coming to sit, all of the things that we're having to deal with, having to put up with and suffer through, he says, come, this is what we can call the fruit of past actions, of things that we have done in the past, and this is the law, or you can say the law of karma, manifesting itself, that we've in the past put in these conditions to reap and to for the result and the fruits and things that we're reaping right now. So that we have to learn to deal with these things and understand and know that this is a natural law.That it arises from a cause, and when there's causes, there's going to continue to be effects, or there's going to continue to be the results from those causes, and this we call the law of karma. So that today he has spoken about quite a bit, and that this is his first trip here to America, so he sees that there's many things to say, and that.He wants to leave you with, to pass on to all of you. And so once again, he said, if you're unhappy or with what he has said, that not to blame him and to put the blame on him, but to rather to put the blame on the Buddha because he's the one that told him to say it.
เพจยาวไปล่ามแปลก็เรียนดีฉลาดขึ้นนะ ถ้ายิงนกเห็นจะถูกทุกตัววันนี้เนาะถ้ายิงนกปุ่งเห็นจะถูกทุกตัวบางวันถูกไหม
He says today he thinks if he was like shooting birds he says he thinks that he would have hit every one of them today is that right
แล้วพระจะมาถามถึงแค่นี้แต่ก็ตอนนี้ไปก็เป็นโอกาสพวกญาติโยมได้ไปพิจารณาโดยตนเองนะให้รู้จักดีชั่วให้รู้จักว่าอะไรมันเป็นอะไรถ้าเห็นของที่ไม่ดีมันทำกวนเราเราพยายามเคลียร์มันออกเคลียร์ไม่คนเห็นก็ได้เคลียร์คนเดียวก็ได้เคลียร์นะให้มันเบานะ
So today this is all that he has to say and that now it is your responsibility to take these things upon yourself to investigate them to contemplate them and toWork with them for yourselves, to know those things which are good and bad, know those things which are right and wrong. And he said that in your development of your practice, he said to relinquish those things which are bad and unwholesome. He says you don't have to let anybody see that or know that. He says that you can just sweep them away and clean them away in yourself, and you don't have to make a big thing out of it and let other people know.But just to continue your practice in this way, continue to develop that which is wholesome, which is good, and to continue to relinquish, to let go of those things which are all unwholesome and bad.
อาตมามันเป็นพระอยากจะพูดตรงไปตรงมาพูดไม่รู้เรื่องไม่อยากจะพูดเลยก็พูดให้มันรู้เรื่องกันเลยใครจะเอาก็เอากันใครไม่จะเอาก็เลิกกันเนี่ยสบายดีเนาะ
He says he's a monkThat likes to speak very directly and to get right to the point, and not to do that, he says, is not useful for anything, and really no real value or positive result will arise from it. So he said, if nobody is willing to listen to his direct, immediate teaching, that he can just finish and quit right here, and that would be fine as well.
รับพรถ้าวันนี้เห็นจะถูกเก็บหลายแล้วเนาะเครียดหนักไปมันจะเก็บรับพรซะนะยะถาวาริวหาปูราปริปุเรนติสาครังเอวเมวอิโตทินังเปตานังอุปกัปปติอิจิตังปฏิตังตุมหังคิปเมวสมิจยตุสเพปุเรนตุสังกปาจันโทปนรสุยทามณิโชติระสุยทาน
บิดิวิวาจันโท
มารวกวินาจโตมาเนมวัตวันตรายโยสุขีเทงกายโกมวะอามิวาตนาสิเรตเนจังโอตามจายโนอาตารวธรรมวัฏันติอายุวันโนสุขังวารังวัตุสัพพมังคารังราคันตุสัพพเทวตาอาปะ บูตานุภาเวนัสสัทธาโสทิภวันตุเตอาวัตุสัพพมังคลังรักขันตุสัพพเทวตาสัมมาธัมมานุภาเวนัสสัทธาโสทิภวันตุเตมาวัตุสัพพมังคลังรักขันตุสัพพเทวตาสัมมาสังฆานุภาเวนัสสัทธาโสทิมาวันตุเต
ยอเสียงระฆังล่ะเออจะดีเหมือนกันนะทำกรรมฐานทำเหมือนระฆังนี่ระฆังมันตั้งไปจะเฉยดูมันเสียงมันมีนะสงบเสียงเมื่อมีเหตุเกิดมากระทบขึ้นมาใช่ไหมเสียงมันเกิดขึ้นมาถ้าเอาตั้งไปเฉยดูมันไม่มีเสียงนักปฏิบัติเป็นการเป็นคนมักน้อยอย่างนั้นเมื่อมีปัญหาเกิดขึ้นมาเหตุขึ้นมาแก้ปุ๊บทันท่วงทีเลยชนะโดยปัญญาของเราถ้าอยู่ธรรมดาก็เฉยอย่างเหมือนไม่มีเสียงให้ทำอย่างนี้เมื่อถูกปัญหาเมื่ออะไรมากระทบตาหูจมูกลิ้นมีเสียงขึ้นมามีปัญญาปุ๊บอย่างนั้นแก้ปัญหาแล้วก็ยุบตัวเข้าไปเหมือนระฆังเมื่อหยุดดีแล้วก็หมดเสียงตั้งไว้เฉยๆทำอย่างนี้
That in our practice, in our meditation, that we should reflect on the bell and make ourselves like the bell. That the bell just sits here very still and very quiet, but that it has the potential to make noise, to make a sound, so that when something comes to contact the mind or through any of the senses, through the eyes, through the ear, through the nose, the tongue, the body, and the mental states that will come to contact this, that when it arises,that immediately we know it and we see it for what it is and then that it passes and again we become still and quiet just like the bell sitting here very silently.
Goodbye now if you keep going with the monk. It says a lot, but he says you'll never finish. เป็นจงกรมใช่นะเออทำเพียรใช่ what was going to happen next. I said there would be 45 minutes of walking meditation in time, and really put yourself to that. Do it with a whole heart. Work with your practice. Also, one other announcement. It'll be 45 minutes of walking meditation, and then tea at 9:30. Following that, if you have energy, come back for a short sitting from 10 to 10:30. The staff will have a meeting in the staff room in about 5 minutes also, please.
So this is the last day. Tomorrow's the last day. It'll be the first day too if we want. The time that Venerable Ajahn Chah and myself have remaining here with all of you is quite short, in the physical form anyway. So, just like anything else, they come together and then we eventually have to part company, the way it is with all things. And so we can use this as a reflection on each and impermanence in our lives. I would like to maybe talk a bit about practice that you can apply, or at least make the effort to apply in your daily lives when you leave here, because that's the real important time. And even though you've applied yourselves in the retreat, probably very diligently, and made a lot of effort in the practice, that it's very important how much can take away with you. And some people may find it confusing when you start to think about applying practice in your daily lives. Start to leave the retreat here towards the end, and your mind starts to go out and grasp onto those things which you know you're going to have to go face up to and confront in your daily lives. But hopefully you've learned a little something here, and for new students and for old students, that you've also learned something so that you can take some of this away and apply it, and be able to apply it in your daily lives. And one of the most important things, and I speak from my own experience in my own particular character, disposition, that is very important, having the support of a community of people doing a similar thing, and that kind of standard that a group is doing and holding to, abiding by, that it's very important for strength and practice. But if for those of us that don't have that, in the times when, even though we're practicing in a group, that we realize that the work that we have to do on ourselves that nobody else can do for us, and we have to keep it all in perspective. And so even if you don't have communities, groups that are doing sitting and things in your respective areas, that you have to establish kind of a schedule, a pattern for yourself, something to develop and to try and keep and maintain. So I would assume that most of you want to continue sitting. Old students, probably no doubt. New students, maybe teetering back and forth if you can really do it or not. But the important thing is making your minds firm and determining to maintain some form of reflection, sitting quietly once a day, twice a day, in a formal way, But ideally, better than that, to be able to reflect in all aspects of daily living, being able to turn all situations, all things into one's practice, to reflect on all situations that you're being in, that you're being confronted with, at home with family and husbands and wives and children if you have them, with relatives and friends and neighbors and the whole thing. So people may be a bit confused on how to do this and how to kind of set that lifestyle for yourself. And as I see it, the important thing is having a standard to go by, and like a formal meditation that you try to do every day, depending on your particular character, the practice of patience, and everybody needs that, of course. But things like if you have a very extreme kind of a dosa, and you're learning to be patient with that dosa, that it's, you know, things that we've accumulated karmically, have accumulated, and we have to start kind of working away on that, and you know, developing love and kindness and compassion for all people, starting with ourselves, knowing the pain, how like aversion and anger and hatred, how painful it is, and no matter how many times we've struck out and been angry, that, you know, that's never solved it, that it just comes back that much more intense, that much more furious and striking back and onto ourselves. So we have to see the harm, the disadvantage in indulging and following those things before we can begin to turn away from them and to begin to see the harm, the painful result, consequence of such indulgence, of such action. And again, coming down to body and speech, if we're keeping our precepts, not talking about 5, 8, 10, 100, 200, whatever, but precepts talking about restraint of one's body and of one's speech, physical and verbal actions, that this is a thing we really have to start trying to become very aware of, become very mindful of. It is like developing a form of art, painting, learning like the different martial arts, Tai Chi or yoga, or anything as far as that goes, learning to play a musical instrument. Here in meditation, we're learning to develop our bodies and our speech and, of course, our minds into a malleable thing, into something that we can use in a really positive, a really skillful and wholesome way, doing those things which are wholesome, which are skillful for us and for others around us, and refraining, abstaining, and relinquishing those things that are harmful for not only ourselves but those around us. And through practice, restraint of one's body and speech, as we begin to see more clearly in our practices, our practice develops and we begin to center more on ourselves and become more and more mindful in all situations, we start to learn, our own wisdom begins to manifest, begins to appear in our lives, and we know in a very instinctively and intuitive way that you know, what is good and what is bad, and nobody has to tell us. And we all have that. We all have that inherent trait. But we also have inherent, of course, all of the evils of the world, that we have the potential to become Buddhas, to become enlightened, to become aware of the true nature of all things. And we also have that inherent nature that we can destroy life, that we can, you know, do the highest harm in the world. And so in that way, we have a choice. And so we have to reflect within ourselves, you know, what we want to do with our lives to make it into a really wholesome, positive thing, and do things which are skillful for ourselves as well as others. The thing we have to be careful of is, of course, Lumpa, Venerable Ajahn Chah, he always talks about people who are extreme metta characters, and you know, wanting to love the whole world, and you know, too much love, extreme kind of love, is there's a lack of balance love is balanced out with wisdom and with detachment, love that is broad, that is all-encompassing, that encompasses all things. Usually when we think of love, we love our family, our husbands, our wives, our children, our parents, our relatives. But when we talk about their parents, their relatives, their children, and things like that, that usually our love is a limited kind of love. And the way that you develop this kind of love and compassion is through turning your attention inwards on yourself and starting to open up in that way. So as you find you turn that attention inwards, it starts to open up your life. And it's not that you have to create this love and this compassion for people, for all sentient beings, that it begins to manifest and appear of its own in a very natural way, that it's a part of the universe, just like all of the things in nature. And this comes with practice and with tuning into yourself and what you really are. So in our daily lives, we have to investigate, really take a good look at what we're doing and start to reflect within ourselves. What is good, what is positive, what is really wholesome, and what is just the opposite? What things are harmful, which things are useful? And always being open to new and changing situations and being able to adapt, being flexible in the way that in practice, that there's no one set pattern that we can use that will always work. It's like walking down a road, and we always, as we encounter obstacles, that each time we encounter an obstacle, that we have to deal with that obstacle in the here and now. That the way we overcame an obstacle yesterday doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work today. If you have to ford a river, then of course you need a boat, or you have to build a bridge. But if you have to go through a wall of fire, that a boat isn't going to do you any good. You need to put it out with some water. And if you're going to have to climb over a tall wall, then water's not going to do you any good. A boat's not going to do you any good. You'd need a ladder. So in this same way, all of our defilements as they arise, the confrontations that we have with other people, with ourselves, with family and friends, that we're always learning. If we are being skillful and always reflecting, we're always learning new ways, more skillful ways to deal with things in the world, how to, and this is the way that we teach ourselves in this way, and reflecting that all of these things are in fact our teachers, our true teachers. All of these things are continuously coming to teach us about ourselves and about other people. People that we can learn the most from, we may think that people that we like to be, that we feel very comfortable around, that we're very familiar with, that are close friends and things, that this is, I think, oh, we can develop a lot of love with these people. But in fact, if we take a little closer look, the people that create a lot of disharmony, or we think that they create the disharmony in our lives, that cause a lot of conflict in our lives when we're confronted with these people, that of course we want to avoid that. It's painful, it's unpleasant, it's suffering. And in fact, if we are wise and we know how to use that we can learn to turn these weeds, these things, into fertilizer for our own practice, into a very positive thing, depending on how skilled we are in developing our body, our speech, and our minds. So as far as specifics and everything, the only thing that I would really encourage you all to try and do, if you don't have already, of course, is regular sitting. Because in the world, of course, you have so many things that you have to get involved in, the things that we have to, jobs and social obligations, and assuming that at least some of you here have those things, that sitting, of course, is always a way of getting things back into perspective, coming back and just, sitting with yourself and quieting yourself down, slowing everything down, putting things back into perspective, and are reflecting on those things which are useful. And the Zen saying that they have is, in the morning hear the way, in the evening die content. And it's very good to reflect on that. in the day to hear the way, to do everything as the way, to practice and to use to the best of your ability all things, all situations as a form of your practice, as a form of learning. And that evening, no matter what's happened, good and bad in that day, let that die away. Be contented with what you've done in that way. Know the results, and then the next day is another day. If you in fact make it for another day, reflecting on death is always an excellent meditation subject to bring us back into the present moment, into the things of immediate concern, that it's always just kind of hovering over us, the shadow of death, that no matter where we go and what we do, that is very uncertain, really reflecting on the uncertainty of these physical bodies, that we're in fact mortal, that this body is, without a doubt, that there should be no doubt in us. At least intellectually, we all can reflect on that, you know, this body in fact does have to die. And this is a very good kind of measuring stick or way of slowing things down and making you realize what is of immediate concern, to really try to do something with your life and make it into a useful thing for yourself and all those around you. So, the things that you do in your lives that, again, all that I can do, all that any teacher can do, is, as far as my experience has been, is just kind of like set these things out in front of us. And for all of us to look at them and to take them up as we see fit, as those things which are useful, take them back and take them home with you and home to your hearts, to your own practice, and see what is useful and what works, and find out those things which are indeed useful and beneficial for you in your lives. And as you'll know that and learn that and develop your practice, that will become clearer and clearer and more and more apparent what is right and what is wrong. And so at this time, if anybody would like to ask any questions, bring anything up, anything about the whole retreat, or which I must apologize for not having had the opportunity to participate all that much because of my obligations to Venerable Ajahn Chah, looking after his needs and stuff. I'd very much love to just come down and sat with you and kept my mouth shut and not done anything except some formal practice, but it's that's not what I've been called upon to do in this particular situation. So I really think we all should feel very fortunate and grateful to have such a place established that we can come and practice in this way. It's really really good coming from Thailand and being away and coming back and seeing the enthusiasm and sincere interest in Dharma practice and in doing something with in this way. So I really like to pass on to all of you. I really appreciate everybody's cooperation and openness and willingness to follow certain traditions and customs that some of you may have had resistance against, nevertheless, that you still did them. And I think probably after having done them, I don't know, that you may have saw that there might be some benefit in them. I hope so, because, you know, that's their purpose, not that everybody kind of conforms and follows blindly the tradition, but learning how to use these things as tools. Things that are instrumental for our practice. Just for bowing, for example, our bodies are pretty stiff, just like our minds. And, we don't want to, because of pride and conceit and cultural values that we have, the idea of high and low, we have no idea of that. Everybody's just kind of on this equality level, which is all right if you're really there. But until you are, things like learning to humble yourself to like bow, and I'm sure it's much more difficult to come in here and put your head on the floor in front of me than it is in front of the Venerable Ajahn Chah. I can sympathize with that very much, and it really just gives me a really fulfilling kind of feeling, not out of conceit or an egotistical way that, oh, everybody's bowing to me, but that you people are so humble to do that, whether you want to or not, that you, the point is that you do it, and that's really a beautiful thing. And but as you learn to, you know, to bow your bodies more, that your minds will begin to bow too, will begin to open up and become malleable and flexible, just like your bodies. So in the beginning, if it's really, you know, stiff and rigid, that you know, you learn to bend it, and as you can bend your bodies, you can bend your minds and learn to, you know, open up to everything. Please.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about this very point of some practices that you could recommend to help establish a kind of purity to be a kind of background for the mindfulness practice. And I was thinking specifically of prostrations and what to be the object of contemplation in prostration.
The chants that you've learned here and the things that you, that Jack has passed on to you, these are really, really valuable things in my particular practice, that this is what, you know, brought me to where I am, these more devotional things, which in general Westerners are very repulsed and just not attracted to at all. Of course, everybody wants just to come in and plop down in their cushion and get on with it. And this is all right, but these devotional things, if used rightly, are really, really useful, really valuable in our lives. So having brought it up, I'll talk just a little bit about them and what I did used in my life and found just you know, really, I think it's, you know, really set my foundation for, you know, for taking me into the robes and my whole monastic life and life and Dharma. That in the beginning, I did come to Buddhism in a very out of a lot of devotion and faith. You know, I read some Buddhist books, and it was all very logical. It made sense to me in that way. But it also gave me something to kind of take refuge in. You know, I can look back. There was more faith, a blind faith, but there was also that wisdom factor that something told me that there was, you know, something more to that. And to, you know, just say it was one or the other is there was both. So I really related to that. I was really looking for that very thing in my life. It's something I really needed to kind of fill in that vacant, that gap I had, that empty space. So, you know, like things like bowing and like lighting incense and, you know, getting a Buddha image and images that I wore around my neck and things like that, they really, for me in the beginning, were very important. And I would do certain chants and reflections. In the beginning, reflecting on the taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Every morning I would reflect, I would avow that morning how many precepts I would keep. I would always keep five, and then usually I would try to keep eight. And in the morning I would decide that, because I, you know, just took a day at a time, because sometimes I would be going home to visit my parents or be invited out in the evening to eat, so that if I knew that, I would, you know, only take five that day. And it just really gave me this firm, solid foundation for my practice. And of course, I would sit as well, practice mindfulness of breathing. And after, I would do these devotional things. So what it does is rather than just contemplate it for yourself, rather than coming in and just plopping down on your cushion, you have to stop, and you have to take your body, and you have to mindfully, you know, squat down, get on your knees, and then like bow three times. And you can do it very mindfully. When you bow, like to, if you have an image or something like that, that's really excellent. If you don't, you can kind of maybe set a place aside in your homes where you can, you know, do like puja, like devotional kind of things, where you can burn incense, change and put flowers up there, and to do incense and flowers and candles. And even if you don't have an image, you can just, you know, make one in your heart up there, and if you do that, you know, that you can use that as reflection on Buddha. And the way that you can use the reflections in this way, you know, as you prostrate three times, that you're bowing to Buddha, to Buddha nature, to what in fact is Buddha. Buddha translates as the enlightened one, or the one who knows. And so so that we, you know, we're reflecting on those qualities, like the chants that you've used here, on reflecting on his quality, that he's, you know, one who has thus gone, who has well trained himself, who is teacher of all gods and men, who, you know, has manifested and appeared in the world for the benefit of all sentient beings, reflecting on those qualities and reflecting that in fact, you know, we in our practice, in our Dharma practice, are the ones who have to become the one who knows. And so rather than projecting it, you know, you use the image as a reflection on his perfections, on his qualities, but we bring that inwards onto ourselves, that we in fact are striving to develop those same perfections, and that we have, you know, that we're able to do that, that it's not inhumanly possible, like he was the living example of that. The Dharma, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, I take refuge in the Dharma. What is the Dharma? The Dharma is the truth, the Buddha said, who sees that truth or realizes it, sees us, meaning him, and who sees him sees the Dharma. The things that we reflect on, that the Dharma is something that is timeless, that it has no ages, no time, that it is always is in the world for those beings, for those people who practice it, who go to realize it, and that it's something that is leading inwards, that everybody is telling us to do it for ourselves, that Opanayiko that we chant, leading inwards or inward leading, and Pachatang Veditabo Vinyuhiti, is that thing to be individually experienced for each one, individually for themselves. And so reflecting on these things, and Sangha, what is Sangha? Sangha, as we, like in Thailand, they say Sangha, they mean the monkhood. But if we reflect on what Sangha means those who practice rightly, practice directly, and practice properly in accordance with what Buddha Dharma is, what Buddha and Dharma is, practice in accordance with those truths. And, you know, the noble ones who have gained the fruit and the path and fruit of Dharma practice. So all these three things that we call the triple gem, and this triple gem is something that, that is in fact one and the same thing, Buddha being the one who knows the Dharma, and those who know the Dharma being Buddhas are the ones who practice in accordance with what is right, this meaning the Sangha, those individuals that practice in accordance with that Buddha Dharma. So reflected in this way, it has so much more meaning, and it, you know, we begin to reflect how it is in fact a real gem, this triple gem, and it is in fact one in the same thing that we have to go towards in our lives, and that kind of that focal point that we're always reflecting on and striving towards. And, you know, after we've reflected to, if one wants to take the precepts, to repeat the precepts that you've done here, and you don't have to take them from a monk or anybody else, that, you know, where you really take them is in your heart, in your own mind, to determine to keep those things. But for your own practice, if you want to reflect on them every day, go through them, you know, I vow to refrain, keep the precept from killing, from, you know, not harming any living thing, to try and protect all life, not to steal, to take those things which are not given from me, from unlawful sexual intercourse, sexual misconduct, and for frivolous speech, all speech which is unwholesome, from, you know, lying is a pretty gross form if we really start to reflect on speech, that most of us aren't going to tell an outright lie. That's a very gross thing, but we have to start looking a bit closer, more subtle kind of lies, like somebody comes up and says, well, you know, how was your practice, you know, what was you doing at your practice, and, well, it went quite well, okay, that's fine, and you say, well, I did the sitter's practice, and you didn't sleep, you didn't lie down at night, and, oh, really, yeah, you know, you did it, but, you know, maybe you cheated a few times, but you just kind of say, you're kind of moving away from the truth a little bit, for somebody to understand something a little bit different. It's not a blatant lie, you know, a really gross lie, but you're like with tale bearing or a white lie, you know, something that's rather innocent. But, you know, what you can reflect on is from this, you can come in and become aware of something more subtle inside, you know, that always wanting to kind of, know, build oneself up, or just to cheat yourself, you know, honesty. And like Ajahn Chah was saying the other night, or the other day, whenever it was, that, you know, if you lie to yourself, you lie to others. And if you steal from yourself, you're going to steal from others. So reflecting on what that means. And of course, the last precept, I think most of us that have come here and at least cleared our heads out for 10 days can hopefully see the value in not clogging it up with, you know, anything from, you know, just a joint or two to, you know, really getting smashed with on alcohol, that these things are not in fact evils in themselves, but they're what that they lead us to do, that they lead us to heedlessness, to on mindful acts. When we lose awareness of what we're doing, you know, we become negligent. Especially alcohol, okay, grass, that's fine. You know, you usually get, you know, pretty mellow when you smoke dope, and you know, you're pretty harmless when you smoke dope. But, you know, where's your head at that time? You know, you're just kind of spacing out, and as much as you might like it, and, you know, I've done probably as much dope as anybody else in Vietnam and everything. All that set aside, that it never once, I had one experience after I practiced meditation for a while, and so I thought I'd get high. And, you know, wow, I could really sit and really concentrate my mind and smoke a joint. Wow, I could really, you know, maybe even get jhana or something if I smoked a joint. So, you know, I had a few tokes on a joint and then got on my meditation cushion. There's no way. It like intensifies, you know, and just makes it that much worse. And so, but of course, all of us have to see that for ourselves. And I can sympathize when those things are tempting and stuff. It's really hard to resist. But, you know, this is where body and speech and the restraint of body and speech start to come in. And more subtle things. And of course, we're not going to go out and, you know, take a bottle of Jim Beam or vodka and you just belt it down and really get blown away. But, you know, we come to a friend's house, we have incense burning and people are doing yoga. A really mellow kind of thing, and yeah, you know, that's more subtle, but it's basically the same thing. You know, we're still avoiding our natural consciousness, and this is what you know, the Buddha taught, that we have to develop and have to go towards, and that it's all there naturally, that we need, you know, no aids, and that the most of the only thing that they can ever do is, you know, make it a bit clearer what in fact we do have and what we have to do, but, you know, that it's not going to do it for us. So all of these things are taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha every day, repeating the things that you've learned here is really a very good thing. And you start to do those more devotional things, and they start to have much more meaning. And you know, the embarrassment that comes from doing them, and you may feel silly, that starts to fall away too, because you know why you're doing them. And even though people, friends, may criticize or think it's silly, that you really start to humble yourself in that way and to really know what the value is in that. And, you know, whether people watch you bow three times, no matter where it is, that you know, it doesn't bother you. In the beginning, it's a bit embarrassing sometimes because you think it's silly, and that's because you really don't know why you're doing it yet. You know, you still have doubts yourself. But when you start to overcome those doubts about it and start to really do it in your heart rather than, you know, the physical way, that, you know, it really starts to take on so much meaning. And these are really valuable things. If people are into them, they're really helpful. They're things that are, look on them as tools, things that are really instrumental in your practice. And after you've done those things, you sit and you just see the difference of, you know, do it for a few days and then don't do it. Just come and plop on your cushion and see the difference. And even if you say, well, there's no difference, you know, right there, you know, there's a conflict, there's something in there that's, you know, that's added. It's kind of a way of slowing down, like what we usually do in Bung Wai, the Western monastery. We have our chanting first, and then we sit afterwards. And really, some of the chants we do. There's one beautiful chant that I was going to give to Jack and write up. It's not really Buddhist, or it is Buddhist, that it mentions karma. But it's really a fine chant. I'll just go through the English. We've been working on it in English. Like in Thai, I'll do the Thai chant in Pali, but the Pali, and then translated in Thai, so like a line of Pali, line of Thai. And we've tried to do that with English before, but it just never worked out because it's highest tonal and it's melodious. And just English is really hard to do that with without kind of singing. And you know, chanting isn't really singing, it's more of, it's kind of in between your talking voice and your singing voice, you know, chanting, depending on the style and things. So one of the novices there, he worked out this chant, he did it, it was already translated, but he you know, kind of put words in or took words out to make it flow better, and then he used kind of a Gregorian rhythm, and he really simplified it. And so it went like this, please forgive my voice, but just listen to the words. And so the first part is, it is my nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. It is my nature to sicken, I have not gone beyond sickness. It is my nature to die, I have not gone beyond dying. All things beloved and pleasing will change and pass away from me. I am owner of my karma, so heir to my karma. I am born of my karma, related to my karma. Abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I shall do, whether for good or for evil, of that I shall be the sole heir. Thus we all should frequently reflect. The Pali would be like this. Jaradamomi jarananatito. It is my nature to age, I have not gone beyond aging. Vayadidamomi payatinganatito. It is my nature to sicken, I have not gone beyond sickness. Maranadhammum hi maranang anatito. It is my nature to die, I have not gone beyond dying. Sabehi me piyehi manabehi nanapao vinapao. All things beloved and pleasing will change and pass away from me. Kama sakom hi kama dayato kama yoni kama bandhu kama pati sarano. I am owner of my karma, so heir to my karma. I am born of my karma, related to my karma. Abide supported by my karma. Yang kamam karisami, kalayanang wa papakam wa. Tasadayato pavisami. Whatever karma I shall do, whether for good or for evil, of that I shall be the sole heir. Evangam hehi abhinang bachove kitabang. Thus we all should frequently reflect. Pali karma is kamma, kamma, same thing. And that's the chant we always, in Thailand, we always, that's the last chant we always do. Just the first, like the Thai, I'll show you the Thai, it's very nice. Jaratamom hi jarananatito, raumi kwam kaben tamada, jaluang pon kwam kaben maidai. More. kind of spicy rhythm to it at the time. Please.
Could you talk a little about the kind of forces? Like you said something that really got me upset. My parents are both old, and they're both very, well, not very ill, but ill, you know, and crippled in the whole show. And could you talk about just like what kind of karma gives people arthritis and stuff like that?
Well, I'll just talk from my own practice and perspective in regards to karma, that to me, and you know, all that you can read about it and everything, of course, is all well and good. But you know, again, as you develop your practice and start to reflect on, you know, action and, you know, good action, bad action, and a good action, good result, and bad action, bad result, and start to, you know, become aware of that and see that in your own life, that it just makes so much sense. It explains, you know, this whole mess that we're all in, more than anything else that I've ever heard or in any other approach. You know, the idea of karma and the cause and effect. So as far as this present life, in my own practice, you know, I can accept things that people are receiving, both physically and mentally, as, you know, the result of past karma. And things that are apparent in this life, of course, you know, because of birth, old age, sickness, and death, you know, that's quite obvious. You know, but why some people so much suffering, you know, such heavy suffering and things. I, you know, for myself, I just, you know, it's something coming back on them in a past life. I mean, you can say, you know, you lost your foot in this life, or you know, you're lame on one leg, or you know, you're short one foot or one leg, and you know, well, you chop somebody's off in another life, kind of thing. And in that way, that's kind of, you know, in some ways it makes sense, in some other ways it, you know, it seems kind of silly, kind of law of retribution. And for myself personally, I don't find that I have to figure it out, that it's not necessary. Because I see it happening in this present life of immediate value, that, you know, I can see that it's just, it's things that people are working through, and there's not a lot that we can do to comfort it other than our own purity that we develop from our own practice, and of course developing love and compassion for everybody, not only our own parents, but there's always somebody that's a little bit worse off and that has something a little bit more painful. And so, just like somebody always seems to be a little bit better off, it, you know, just always works in that way. So the way that we can help the most is our own practice and, you know, developing ourselves in that way, opening ourselves up to all the sufferings of the world and of our families and things. And one, the thing that came up the other day, that brought up about, Lung Pao was talking about culture and things and cultural value of the differences in Thailand and in America here. And that one, I didn't understand the question first, but he was, you know, implying about, what about my parents? You know, I've ordained and kind of, you know, left my parents, kind of thing. There's a beautiful discourse. I don't know if it's a full sutra or discourse of the Buddha's. It was just advice to one of the monks or to a lay person about practice towards one's parents, and was asked, how do you in fact repay your parents? And he drew the simile. The Buddha said that even if one was to shoulder one's parents around, one in each shoulder, to carry them around, you know, physically, put out that physical effort to carry them around, to anoint them with all of the perfumes and garlands and sprinkle all of these lovely things on them, and to give them gold and silver and all of the riches of the world, if one was to do that for even 100 years, that you wouldn't even come close to repaying all that one's parents had done for you, bringing you up, bringing you into this world, and sweated and toiled for all of the things and troubles that they had to go through to bring us up. But, you know, that you could never repay them in that way. But if one could give them one teaching of Dharma, one just minute portion of the Dharma, that you would in fact have paid them and more, and repaid them and more than repaid them for, you know, for that act. And so I reflect on this and feel it's real. I can see it happening in my life with my parents. I mean, you just wouldn't believe taking, you know, this jolly little man that's come along with me back home to mom and dad. And, you know, staying in their house, all of us, for 2 weeks. It was just an incredible experience. And the influence that he had on my family, my sister, my mother and father, relatives and friends, was just incredible. And he really, my father, he just like picked him up and he just like molded him, you know, and my father was just ready to be molded. And it was just really beautiful. And my father, he really just sees something really beautiful in this. And all of them are coming in this direction in their own way, and not, you know, they're going to, you know, convert to Buddhism kind of thing, but in their own way, their own Dharma practice is starting to, you know, it's a reflection for them. It just becomes so obvious that they reflect, and then they all bow, and you know, in their own home, bowing to this man, bowing to me. I mean, really, you know, your parents bowing to you, and even if you shave your head and put on freaky robes.
How are they handle that?
And they did in Thailand. They were just, it was just beautiful. It was really beautiful. So.
Excuse me.
Did I?
Yeah.
All right.